Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers, locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Here's the game, ladies and gentlemen. With no timeouts left, the Jaguars will not be able to stop the clock. Gerard barks out the signals in the shotgun, takes the snap, drops now. He's going to run, and David's going to get in and more. He's at the 25-yard line. Stays on his feet. 20. There he goes. 15. And he's down at the 10. How about that one? 40 seconds to play in the wild card. The snap, the placement, the kick up on the way. Scobie drills it, and the Jaguars retake the lead. 31-29 with 37 seconds to play.
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith.
Good morning and welcome into a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today. Tony Smith here with you, Emmanuel Thalarin alongside as Game 3 of the NBA Finals in the books as of last night, and maybe a bit of a surprise for a lot of people out there as Toronto taking control of the series, and we'll see how that plays out. I'm sure a lot of breakdown of that as we continue along after Jaguars Today. XL Primetime coming up after us at noon. I'm sure they'll be getting into the NBA Finals. Us, not so much. We got one topic we hit, Emmanuel.
How much of the Finals did you actually watch, Tony?
None last night. And I can tell you why I watched none of it last night is the Braves game in Pittsburgh was supposed to be at 7 o'clock, and it got delayed a couple hours due to weather. So they didn't start playing until about 9:15. What time did the finals come on?
9 o'clock.
Yeah,
that's when it started.
So I was watching the Braves game.
So if the Braves game wasn't on, if it didn't come on, you would have watched some of the finals.
I would have watched probably the end of it at least.
Okay.
Whenever the ball game was over, I would have flipped over for the round ball. Perhaps.
Okay.
I've watched more of the first two games of the NBA finals than I have in a while. Like the NBA, just it's not my thing. I get it. For people out there that love it. Love it, man. I'm not going to tell anybody what they should or shouldn't enjoy. I can just tell you NBA is not really my thing. I'm glad people enjoy it that do. I enjoy baseball probably a whole heck of a lot more than the vast majority of the people out there. So, yeah, that's what I was doing last night at least. And fortunately for me, the Braves have an afternoon game today. So I'll get it done by about 3 o'clock with the Braves today and then have the entire night free. But we do have some Jaguars to get into. Doug Marrone speaking before OTA practice today. We'll see if today is the last day of OTAs for the Jags or not. They have practice scheduled today at their regular time, 10:45 to 12:45. And then they're scheduled to be back on the field tomorrow. But the way this last week of OTAs usually works, they have like a movie day or something they've done before. They've done bowling in the past before on that final Friday of the OTAs after being week three of this. And you get little hints at times as to whether or not they're planning on doing something like that. And when the team sent out the media itinerary for this week, right, they let us know who's speaking and when before and after practice. So we knew today, for instance, Doug Marrone's going to be speaking before practice. And after practice, Cam Robinson will be talking to the media. So it'll be good to hear from Cam, see where he is in the rehab, how he's feeling. We heard from Marquise Lee earlier this week, so it's rehab week after practice for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But Cam Robinson, going to talk to the media after practice today, so we'll get an update from him. But Friday on the schedule, Emmanuel, you know what they had on the schedule for Friday?
What's that?
Not a thing. They had a player or coach before and after practice, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, nothing. And when I saw Marrone was speaking today, I was like, what might they have planned for this Friday? So we'll see. They're at least scheduled to be out on the field for OTAs today and tomorrow. We'll, again, it's been something that in the past has been moved for them to do like a team building
bonding
activity. Yeah, whatever they call them. They've done the bowling in the past. They've done different things. Have they done paintball? Do I feel like they did paintball one year?
I'm not sure.
Someone out there will remember, but I feel like they did paintball one year, which seemed like an odd thing to me. But, you know, I don't know about running around. I don't know if I do an activity where I got guys running around through the woods, you know?
Paintball gets real.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's the one I would play. Like, bowling, I understand. Seems like a really low risk of anybody getting hurt doing the bowling thing. Movie, certainly super low risk. You get hurt going to a movie, your body's trying to tell you something. You know? It's in full attack mode on you. You get hurt going to movies at this point in your life. But, yeah, we'll see if they're out there for OTA practice tomorrow. Not going to be interesting to hear what Doug Marrone has to say here in about 15 or 20 minutes. Hayes Carline will join us a little bit later on the show this morning. We'll get his reaction to what Coach Marrone has to say, as well as what's been going on the field for the Jaguars this week, as the mandatory minicamp coming up next week for the Jags. And if he expects any surprises, we had John Osier in yesterday and asked him about the guys who I don't expect any of them to not be here. Jalen Ramsey's certainly going to be here. Yannick Ngakoue, I think, is going to be here. It makes sense for him to be here. Leonard Fournette would be a stunner if he wasn't here, given everything else that is going on. But at least it's a question that I get asked by fans. So when I have an opportunity to ask other people about it, I will. We'll talk to Hayes Carline about that a little bit later on today. Going to let you hear his interview with DJ Chark, who's going into year number two. And obviously it's a big one for DJ, as he's a guy that I know we seem to mention it every time that we bring up Chark, but the team drafted him in the second round last year and said that they had a first-round grade on him, and it's time. You know, year two, despite having missed what he missed, it's time for him to look like that kind of player for this Jaguars team. So we'll let you hear that interview a little bit later on, maybe let you hear a little bit from Keenan McCardell as well. We got some other things that we're efforting. Josh Evans will join us here in about 10 minutes, the former Jacksonville Jaguars safety. It'll be interesting to get his view on, you know, as Dan Hicken said when we were talking to him during crosstalk, I don't remember Josh Evans ever being a guy that there was even a consideration for not showing up for the voluntary portion of an offseason. Probably wasn't a player that was looked at the same kind of level as a Jalen Ramsey.
Josh knew he had to get his butt there.
Yeah, Josh knew. So going to talk to him about not only OTAs, but what it is like for a player who's fighting for a roster spot year to year in the National Football League this time of year, and just how important these can be for these players. And of course, the overriding story today and the question of the day, instead of asking a question today, decided to switch it up a little bit given what kind of day it is. 75 years ago today, the Allied forces invaded the beaches in Normandy, and it turned the tide of World War II, and obviously led eventually to the defeat of the Nazis, and then there was the fight in the Pacific as well against Japan. But today, 75 years ago, those boys took that beach. And it's a day that, look, not only should you be taking a moment, you should be taking a whole lot more than a moment to think about the sacrifice of an entire generation. And it was on those beaches, it was here at home, with families that knew their sons, their fathers, their brothers were over there fighting on that beach. So asking you today to take more than a moment, what would your thank you look like? Like, instead of asking a question about Jaguars football, these kind of days, again, make that feel so small when you think about it in the scope of history. I do have some history that I found, right? We are an NFL show, so I decided to keep it with an NFL slant to it as far as the D-Day invasion and maybe some NFL tidbits regarding that. And I found some interesting things. I'll be sharing those a little bit later on in the show this morning, but do want to give you the opportunity to say thank you, as we should be saying it every day, but on the 75th anniversary, I saw a really cool video of a 95-year-old man who parachuted into the spot where he parachuted 75 years ago yesterday. Right?
That's pretty legit.
During the invasion of Normandy. So he landed behind the German lines there at the beach, but he parachuted to basically the same spot that he did 75 years ago, 95 years old. And his comments afterward, he was like, it was a good day for it. It was a good flight. It was a good landing. It's like, that's pretty incredible.
That's pretty legit.
To be 95 and still be willing to do something like that, much less able to go do something like that. So certainly want to take a few minutes today and extend our heartfelt thank you to the men who sacrificed so much on that day. And again, we'll give you some of the little tidbits that I found a little bit later on. And I'm a sucker for this stuff. You know, I am the guy who will go watch Band of Brothers once a year. You know, I am the guy who, for Memorial Day, I pretty much watch Black Hawk Down. There's a list of movies that I go through every year, and I also am the guy who understands there's so much I don't know, right? There's so many stories that there's no possible way to have heard yet, so if you have a story that you want to share, share it with me. I'd love to hear it. If you have a family member who fought, love to hear it, whatever they're willing to share, because I know I had family that fought in different wars, and for the most part, and I totally get it, they don't want to talk about it. So for those that don't want to talk about it, totally respect that, given the sacrifice that you have to make to even go over there and fight these kind of things. But for those who do, you're darn right I'm willing to listen to every word that they have to share about their experience. There is no doubt about that. So if you have any of that that you want to share this morning, we'd love to hear that as well. Josh Evans is going to join us next. We'll get his reaction to OTAs as he looks back on his Jaguars career here with us. And we'll wish him a happy birthday. It was his birthday, I think, just yesterday there on this date in football history. So we'll welcome in former Jaguars safety Josh Evans as we roll along. It's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
It's time to turn up the heat. Duval Honda puts you in the driver's seat. Jaguars Today puts their guests on the hot seat. Hot seat. This interview presented by Duval Honda on 1010XL.
10 rushes, 64 yards, 6.4 yards per rush. Second and five, Roethlisberger, pump fake it, and a professional football collision on that play. Josh Evans sending Justin Brown to the top.
When you pump fake it so many times, it leaves the defender close to the receiver for, as you said, that kind of collision.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
There you hear the highlight for Josh Evans, former Jacksonville Jaguars safety, who's kind enough to join us this morning for a few minutes here on the program. Josh, happy birthday a day late, buddy.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
What do you got going on besides ET just let me know that you got inducted into your high school's Hall of Fame? What's the deal with that?
Yes, sir. Well, yeah, a few weeks ago, man, I was actually the first athlete at my high school to get inducted for dual sports, track and field, and football as well. So it was amazing, man, to get back out there and meet up with some of the other guys who got inducted as well and just had a great time.
How often do you get to go back home?
Not often. You know, here and there, probably about 3-4 times a year. You know, I get a chance to get up there, get around my folks.
Yeah, no doubt. What else do you have going on, man? I know recently you were playing with the AAF, and we can get into that a little bit here in a minute, but what else do you have going on?
Man, just working, man. You know, I opened up a gym. I'm coming up on my first year anniversary here in July. So just been busy, man, taking care of that, getting things up and running there.
Are you still trying to play football?
At this point, it's kind of up in the air. You know, I'm not pressing the issue. You know, if I get the phone call, great. If not, I've been real big on entrepreneurship and just learning more about the business aspect of things.
So to this point, you haven't heard anything from the XFL yet?
Yeah, they actually reached out to me a few times via email and phone calls, but to be honest, I'm 100% not interested at all.
Not interested in the XFL. Can you tell me, is part of that because of what happened with the AAF?
Somewhat. You know, I think when you've played at the highest level in the NFL and you got a feel for how things are done professionally, it's tough dealing with expansion league, just like it was tough playing in the AAF. I mean, you know, it's different rules and things, don't get me wrong, it's football at the end of the day. But just how things ran, you know, it's totally different. And I think that's kind of where it can kind of conflict. Now, for a younger guy, a guy who probably never got opportunity or kind of child from team, never got a chance to play, maybe it might be more of something to their liking to get them some more film, some more tape, some more experience to get back in it. But, yeah, for me, nah. I mean, I don't think I can do another expansion league.
Yeah, keep yourself busy, man. That's all you need. You got plenty going on. You got plenty going on. Josh Evans, former Jaguar safety, joining us here. And Josh, was curious to get your take a little bit. We're watching for the last couple weeks with the Jags being in OTAs now. Some players here, some players not. What are your memories of OTAs in general this time of year?
Right. So OTAs pretty much, stating this clear, as a younger guy, it's something that you definitely want to take serious. You know, people are getting to know you. You're kind of showing what you can do, showing off a little bit of your athleticism and your ball skills and whatnot. So it's pretty much you just getting the opportunity to showcase what you can do and putting it on tape. You know, that's like the first chance these guys get at you. For some of the older guys who probably been in the league, I mean, you're talking 6-7 years, or a guy who's proven himself who might have played 3 years. You know, some of those guys might take that time to be with family and, you know, take a little bit of that time off and come back for mandatory minicamp.
Sure. What kind of pressure did you feel coming in as a sixth-round pick, and how did that pressure maybe change for you going into year two and beyond?
I actually came in with a chip on my shoulder, you know, and I always tell guys, you know, don't get caught up in the race. You know, I had a second to third round grade. I thought I was going a little earlier, and I fell to the sixth. You know, things happen. But I came in, you know, ready. I mean, it actually worked in my favor, you know, playing under Gus Bradley and the scheme we had with Dan Quinn, because those guys and Will Muschamp were great friends. So it was a similar scheme to what I ran in college. But it was great, man. It was a great, you know, a great feeling. But I would say it was competitive every year. Not a year past where I wasn't competing for my job. You know, they kept me on edge every year in Jacksonville. They kept you on your toes. And that's really what it was all about, you know, making sure guys competed at the highest level. It was never comfortable. I was never in a place to where it was just mine to have. It was always kind of mine to lose at a point and always get it back. You know, definitely battling with a few injuries here and there, but overall, it was very competitive.
I've said this a couple times this week, Josh, just talking to different people around the team that are covering these OTA practices, but I really believe that rookies don't even know how much their head's spinning until they get back in the building for year two. Like, I don't think there's any way to even know how much you don't know about what's going on until you get back for year two. Does that speak or ring true to you?
You know what? I'm going to be completely honest with you. And when I say you're speaking to the choir right now, like, I did not know what being a pro was my rookie year. You know, it take you a while. I mean, you're 21 years old. I mean, you just happened to get in the league. You know, you made a little bit of money for yourself. You're feeling pretty good. And then you get a whole offseason, and you like, whoa, I get off, you know, January, February, March. Like, these are guys who haven't experienced that. Think about it. Even from high school, you know, to college, you've always been busy. You've always been occupied, whether it was school, whether it was tutoring, whether it was, you know, off-season drills and whatnot. So I had to learn what it was like to be a pro, and I'll never forget the conversation I had with Paul plus Leslie. And I asked him, I said, hey, well, you know, what do, you know, to take care of yourself? And he was like, hey, man, you got to take care of your body in order, you know, to last here. And I was like, well, what do? He mentioned about the massages and taking care of your body outside of practice and watching more film. And it kind of hit me my second and third year than it did the first year. You know, you're partying, you're having fun, you're not really thinking, just being young and dumb, man. But being a pro is doing it when nobody's watching. You know, nobody's watching you and you being accountable for your own actions. And they can pretty much depend on you, you know?
Yeah. When did you feel like you became the guy that were taking the young guys under your wing a little bit in that regard?
I would say around year three for me. You know, year three, because your second year, you're still new. You know what I mean? You just kind of got out your rookie year. And don't get me wrong, you have guys, you know, who come into year two. Like, for example, a guy like Kelvin Smith, I like to use him. He was a guy who came in his rookie year, you know, stood out a little bit, started making some plays, but he always had the leadership mentality. Everybody knew this kid at some point was going to be a leader of this team. He was always very vocal. So coming into his second year, they kind of knew, okay, he's the vocal guy. For a guy who was not as vocal, but, you know, probably a leader in his room, it might be different. But, yeah, I would say in my third year, it's kind of where things got comfortable for me to be able to talk to guys, be to help guys out. I knew the defense, you know, in and out and how to do certain things. So I was able to be more vocal and actually gain more knowledge.
Josh Evans, former Jaguars safety, joining us here on Jaguars Today for a few minutes this morning. And, Josh, an issue that the team faced last year defensively, it seemed like at times there were just communication breakdowns. And it's hard to tell when you're not on the field and you're not getting the call from the coaches. Again, we don't know exactly where the breakdown occurred, but when during an off season or going into a season should that no longer be any kind of question as far as guys just communicating a call with one another?
It's huge, man. And that all comes down to the chemistry, and that all comes down to when you're fighting a little bit through adversity. I've been there, you know, plenty of times, you know, when I came here in Jacksonville, and you got to be on one accord. And I felt the same way last year just watching those guys on tape. You can see guys kind of in one coverage and say the nickelback might have was in the wrong one or a linebacker just dropped to his zone. I mean, as a defense, you got to play collectively together. And it was definitely a few times where guys were just doing either their own thing or maybe the call didn't get reciprocated to everybody was on, you know, one level. But is big, man. It's a chemistry thing, and it's guys, you know, holding each other accountable. I will say it's like a cancer, though. Like, when things aren't going your way, you know, they had high hopes, and when things don't go your way, sometimes it can become a cancer, and it travels from one person to another person to where you just stop caring, and it really takes away the competitive edge of football.
What are your thoughts when you watch Jalen Ramsey play corner?
I like Jalen Ramsey. I like him a lot. I think he's a physical corner. You got to have a swagger behind it. He's going to talk his trash, and me personally, I like every bit of that. I mean, I think to have a confident corner on your team, a guy who's going to guard one of the toughest receivers in the league every game. I mean, a guy like that, you got to give his credit. You know, when you win more than you lose, how could you not, you know, stand behind that? And you kind of like corners to be a little scrappy, you know? You got to be a little scrappy corner these days, man. But I like his game. I think he's going to be a great guy.
Who was the best trash talker in the 3 years you were here?
On the team that I played with?
Yeah.
The trash talker. Now you're taking me back. Who talked a lot of trash? Cyprian talked a lot of trash. Uh-huh. When we played. Yeah, we'll get after it a little bit. Branch talked some trash. You know what? Chris Clemens, oh, man, he was something else. He talked a lot, too. Chris Clemens talked a lot of trash. I mean, it was a few guys. I mean, it depends. You got some guys who wasn't really talkers and some guys who were. Me, personally, I like to talk a little bit. It kind of gets you going. It kind of gets you on the mental state.
Was there ever a guy that when he was talking trash, you just kind of rolled your eyes? Like, come on.
Some people take it a little extreme. I remember one game, and this wasn't somebody on the Jags. This was my rookie year. We played San Fran in London.
Uh-huh.
This was the first game, you know, I ever played overseas. And I will say Anquan Boldin really showed me, you know, the difference between being young in this game and a grown man who's been playing for some time. And I don't know why it was personal, but he came to block me one play, and I got the best of him on that play, and literally every play after that, whether it was a run or pass, he just kept running to me to hit me every play. And I'm like, dude, I know I'm not the one you're supposed to be blocking on this play. But yeah, he was talking trash the whole game. He kind of got into my head a little bit to where I had to keep my head on the swivel and watch him every play because he was just that type of guy. And as we all know, he talked a lot of trash too.
Sure. And that was the day Kaepernick ran wild that day.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he ran wild. He had a field day.
Yes, he did. The big addition for the Jags this offseason, Josh, is clearly the quarterback, Nick Foles. Just how much of a difference from a team perspective can having a steady hand at the quarterback position make?
I think, man, it's huge, man. I like Nick Foles a lot, too, man. I've been saying that even 2 years ago that I think Jacksonville would be a great fill for him. I think with a guy of his caliber, it doesn't even start with the quarterback. It starts with your protection. It starts with the O-line, the guys who's blocking for him. We know he can ear it out. We know he got a strong arm. But I think it's going to really come down to the protection. If they can get the guys, you know, to build that chemistry on the O-line and make sure he's protected, man, the sky's the limit for a guy like Nick Foles here in Jacksonville. I think he's definitely going to be a guy who can change things around and show some excitement and splashes of what, you know, the offense can look like. And, you know, having a guy like Leonard Fournette and some of the running backs there as well, I think just open up the game.
How close to 2017 do you think they can get back? Because 2018, 5-11, obviously a massive disappointment, change in quarterback, some changes along that defense as well. We'll see what's going on with Telvin Smith, but don't expect him to be here this year for that defense. What do you expect out of this 2019 team?
I mean, I expect them to be a team that bounced back. You know, I still got high hopes for these guys. I think they're starting to put the pieces, the puzzle together. You know, they're starting to, you know, grab guys and some guys they got during some agency. And like I said, this was huge to get a guy like Nick Foles, a Super Bowl winning quarterback, somebody who's been in a hostile environment, who's played under the pressure, who know what it's like to be at the top and kind of know what it's like to be at the bottom. So this guy kind of shuffled around a little bit with all the experience he has. And I think he's going to be able to bring that to a team, you know, and kind of show them the standards of what it's like, you know, some of the veteran receivers they got as well. I think they got a great opportunity. But once again, it comes down to the chemistry, you know, them being on one page, being on one accord, them actually leading and taking accountability and listening to the leaders of the team. That's big. You know, you can't have guys wanting to do their own thing. And I feel like hopefully this year is something that they can kind of put together and actually learn from one another and pick his brain, you know, see what he's seeing and be on one accord with Nick.
Josh, appreciate you giving us a few minutes this morning. Before I let you go, is there any play or moment or memory that stands out for you most from your time here in Jacksonville?
Memorial play. Yeah, I would say I think it was us. It was the Tennessee game. This was going back probably my second or third year.
The Thursday night game. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. It was the Thursday night game. Yep. We played Tennessee, and we pulled it off at the end. I think Jordan Todman scored a long touchdown, and it was great. I mean, we wasn't even projected to win that game, but we pulled it off, and we knew coming into that it was a rivalry game and a team that we had to go out there and beat. And just the atmosphere was electric, man. See the fans getting after it. I mean, you got the fireworks going after it, and that was probably like our first kind of big win, you know, when I was.
Was that the night Big Sin got the sack?
Yep.
And got that bonus?
Yep.
Was that that night? That,
and did that the money was, dance.
Yeah, he did the money dance. And we all knew what time it was then.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was great, man. It was great.
All right. Josh Evans, we appreciate it, buddy. And we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. And congratulations on the Hall of Fame up there with the high school. That's pretty cool to be the first guy inducted into any kind of Hall of Fame. So congrats appreciate on that. It. And happy birthday again, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you, guys.
All right. Josh Evans, former Jacksonville Jaguars safety there, kind enough to join us for a few minutes this morning on Jaguars Today. We'll get back into a little bit of Jaguars talk here. Hayes Carline caught up with DJ Chark, second-year wide receiver, earlier this week. We'll let you hear that conversation. Maybe a little bit from receivers coach Keenan McCardell as well, talking about some of these young guys that he's trying to get coached up as the Jags are looking for a big turnaround. There's more space for a turnaround at wide receiver and possibly quarterback than anywhere else on this roster. So they're expecting a big, big kind of bounce back year from those two spots. So we'll let you hear a little bit about that. Also, continuing to take your text, your tweets, talking about the 75th anniversary of D-Day. 75 years ago today, those boys stormed that beach. And one pushed back the Nazis, won that war eventually, and fought the war in the Pacific as well. But 75 years ago today, that invasion officially began. So just your thank yous. We'll be sharing some of those a little bit later on during the show this morning as well. As we continue along, it's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Continue sharing your D-Day thank yous with us. 75 years. Pretty unbelievable. Right? And just how much the world has changed in 75 years is pretty incredible, too. But today, 75 years ago, they invaded the beaches at Normandy, and we say a thank you. We'll share some of those that you have sent in this morning as well. A little bit later on the show, the Jags getting back out on the practice field here in about 5 minutes this morning. Head coach Doug Marrone speaking before OTA practice today. Again, nobody's scheduled to speak before or after practice tomorrow, so I'm assuming they got something else planned, although I guess they could get back out on the field. Hey, man, they were 5-11 last year. I don't think you can complain about anything that they ask you to do if you're one of these players. You went from the AFC Championship game, and by the way, Doug Marrone that year during that offseason pushed them as hard as any team that I've covered, at least, in Jacksonville has ever been pushed. I mean, they just killed those guys through those OTAs and then into training camp. And, hey, they were in an AFC Championship game. It didn't feel all that different to me last year, but I'm sure if you want to perceive it as different, something went wrong for them to go from AFC Championship game to 5-11. So you certainly couldn't blame them if they wanted to go hard for an extra day that maybe they usually wouldn't with OTAs. But, again, as we talked about with John Osier yesterday during the program, what are you really getting out of it? You know, this time of year, you're doing a lot of classroom work and you want to see it translate to the field. But even that's limited as far as how much you can get done. You just want to get yourself in a position where when you come in for training camp, you're not having to get everybody caught up, that you're ready to roll. And that a few weeks into camp, when the attention seriously starts turning towards week one, and the Kansas City Chiefs, that the guys that you need to be ready to do that are going to be ready to do that. So one of the questions that Doug Marrone was asked this morning along the lines of the guys who aren't here You know, Leonard Fournette's still not here, among others. Jalen Ramsey, obviously not a guy who it sounds like is ever going to take part in the voluntary portion of an NFL offseason. That's fine. When he comes in and balls the way that Jalen Ramsey balls, I got no issue with him not being here. I have some issue with Leonard Fournette not being here simply because of the story that Leonard Fournette has gotten himself into over the way that he's handled some things the last couple of years. Just raises an eyebrow a little bit. But Doug Marrone was asked about the guys who haven't been here this morning, and he did say that all the guys that haven't been at OTAs, any of the OTAs, have been in communication with him and the team, and that he expects them to all be here for the mandatory minicamp, which is not a surprise. So anyone who was expecting a holdout from Unique Ngakoue, at least it sounds like if that does happen next week, it would be a surprise to the team. I don't expect it when they come in for the mandatory minicamp next week. Certainly expect Jalen Ramsey to be here and Leonard Fournette to be here as well. And wouldn't be surprised at all if over the weekend when they send out their media schedule for next week, that Tuesday before practice we see head coach Doug Marrone, and Tuesday after practice we get Jalen Ramsey. Wouldn't be a surprise at all. Certainly I expect Jalen to be speaking after practice one of those days in front of the podium there for the team. But head coach Doug Marrone says he expects all those guys to be there next week. Updating a minor injury from yesterday, rookie running back Ryquell Armstead had a hamstring injury, hobbled off the field a little bit. Doug Marrone talked about it this morning, said it classified it as a slight hamstring, and says that likely they're going to hold him out for the rest of this week and minicamp next week as a precautionary deal, but that they expect that he will be back and ready for the beginning of training camp in July. Said the same kind of deal with Josh Allen, the first-round pick who bruised his knee on the first day of OTAs. They've held him out since. They don't expect him to participate either today or tomorrow or next week with the mandatory minicamp, and that he will be obviously ready to go for training camp as it's a minor injury. It's just there's no reason to push those kinds of things this time of year with these guys. So an update at least from an injury perspective for a couple of guys there. Now let's get into the group that, again, I think as far as space for improvement, right? I talked about it earlier this week. I don't think there's a bigger discrepancy between what fans expect and what the team seems to think they have at any position than there is a wide receiver. I don't think that there is a position where there is more room for upside, potentially, than wide receiver either with, you know, guys like D.D. Westbrook, who hopefully take another step forward in their career. Marquise Lee, getting him back on the field, I think could be a big deal for this football team. And D.J. Chark going into year number two, the expectation is going to get higher and higher and higher for him. So the pressure is going to ratchet up. How well does he handle that? We saw Keelan Cole not handle it very well last year when he was asked to step into that number two wide receiver role. Just wasn't something he was ready to do yet. Year number two, maybe he's more prepared to do that. Year number three, that's to be found out. But do want to let you hear, Hayes Carline caught up with second-year wide receiver DJ Chark earlier this week. First, though, let's hear the thoughts of his wide receiver coach, Keenan McCardo, who spoke before practice on Tuesday and was asked about DJ Chark and just how much he's improving.
I've seen him grow as a football player, and things start to slow down for you in your second year. As being in your first year, it's like a tornado. Everything is all the same. It sounds the same. Now he can pick and choose how to run routes, decipher defenses, you know, and stuff like that, which will make his game improve just understanding defenses in his second year.
Yeah, this league is hard. You know, it's a really, really difficult league. I went over the stats yesterday with one of the birthdays during this state in football history where there have been 22 rookies in the history of football. 22 rookies in the history of professional football to have 1,000 yards in their rookie year. It's really hard. Really, really, really difficult. And again, four of those guys were drafted after the fourth round. So there's a spot where you get them. And that's despite what the league has become. You know, more and more passing league every year. Some of those guys that are on that list are guys like Julio Jones, right? Not a surprise there that Julio would be on that kind of list with the kind of pick he was and talent he was coming into the league. But it's a really, really difficult transition from college to the NFL at the wide receiver spot. There's just so much expected out of you. And DJ, unfortunately, wasn't able to get himself on the field basically for the second half of last season, but the expectations are all still going to be there waiting on him. When he gets back on the field this year for year number two, Hayes Carline had the chance to catch up with the second-year wide receiver DJ Chark earlier this week.
We're pleased to be joined with Jaguars receiver DJ Chark here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. DJ, first off, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us. Coming off the field here, a hot day. How'd you feel like it went for you? It looked like you were all over the place making plays with Nick.
I felt pretty good. Another day just getting into this playbook, trying to make sure I know it front and back. Still getting rhythm with Nick and route concepts and things like that, but just focus on getting better, and I feel like we did today.
What kind of strides do you think you've made this offseason and OTAs?
A good bit. You know, I know what to expect now. I know the daily routine, you know, the amount of workload that's going to be put on my body, things like that. So I know how to approach each day a little bit more mature and smarter.
Keenan said that your understanding of defenses has really improved and that's helped your route running. Is that the feedback you're getting, and why have you been able to be so successful with that?
Yeah, I agree. Big thing is studying. A lot of this is mental, so I'm studying the playbook at least an hour or two when I get home every day, watching film, which I did last year, but not as much. I feel like it wasn't as serious as I'm taking it now, so I'm trying to make that stride. To also correct everything that I see wrong, even on good plays. If I see something that I don't like, when that play called again, I'm focused on getting it better and things like that.
What's the difference with having Nick here?
I love having Nick here. He helps me out a lot with my routes. If I don't understand something, he tells me. If he's going to do something, he's going to tell you why he's doing it. Very smart. So if we're in the game, he give me an audible. I know he sees something, you know, that he feel like he take advantage of, and he's going to put every receiver in the best position. So when I'm out there, if he give me an audible, I feel like that's going to be open, and most of the time it is. And if it's not, then he go through his reads and find somebody else. So you can always trust that he's going to make the right decision.
How well does he throw the deep ball?
Oh, great. I think the biggest thing is, you know, he's not scared of it. You know, he drop back. If he sees it, he's going to throw it. And expect us to make the play. If it's most of the time, it's a good ball. But if one get away from him, we're going to go try to make the play for him because, you know, he had that confidence in us. So we're going to try to keep the confidence up so that he can keep doing it. And the coach is giving the leeway to do it. And it's been working pretty good so far in OTAs.
What do you like best about flip scheme and how does it suit you?
There's a lot of different combinations of routes. And he's not afraid to go deep. He's not afraid to attack something that he see in defense. He's pretty smart with putting schemes together. So whenever I'm out there, you kind of going into the field, kind of go back to learning the defenses. You kind of know what's going to be open and what coverage. So if I'm running around and I see a certain coverage, I kind of have an idea of where the ball is going to go. And I think he do a pretty good job of helping us out with that.
DJ, you've got a nice trip coming up to London. How much are you looking forward to that and representing the Jaguars?
Oh, I'm excited. Get to go to London again. This will be my second time. First time was for the game, so this time I get to see a little bit more of London and get acquainted with the fans. And so I'll be even more prepared when we go out there this year to play.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. When you went your first time, does that affect you at all? The first time I went over there, it really did. You feel the jet lag. The second time, it was a lot easier. Was that your experience, that going over there the first time, that you sort of felt it?
I think so. Like I said, rookie year, everything was a first for me. So everything, you experience it, then you realize how I feel after you experience it. So after being there 1 year, going back this year, you know, I'll be more used to it. I know the flight. I'm not going to be as excited on the plane ride where I'm up all day for 8 hours or however long it is. I can actually get some sleep this time, be on the right schedule, things like that. So I think that rookie year, that rookie trip was a good experience. And now I can be more focused on what I have to do when I get there.
You made such an impact on special teams. When you reflected on that, why were you able to be so successful with that area of your game, and how much pride do you take in that going into year two?
Just taking coaching, I think special teams is two things. It's the willingness to do it, and then next is your talent. And I think one thing was I told, you know, every team in the draft process that I was willing to do special teams, and I was. So when I got here, they expected me to play special teams, and I took on that role, and I found that I was able to earn the trust of a lot of my teammates that way. A lot of guys started pulling for me because of special teams, because I was going out there, bust my butt every play. And now that I got that respect from that in that aspect, it feels good to know that whenever I'm out there, I could be counted on, I'm trusted to do it. And I just take pride in it's another form of football. Sometimes I can have the ball in my hand if it's kick return. Sometimes I get the tackle, you know. So it's just exciting for me. It's football.
DJ Chark, thank you so much for your time, and certainly best of luck to you next week in the mandatory minicamp.
Thank you.
DJ Chark there catching up with Hayes Carline before or after practice on Tuesday. And Hayes has had the chance to catch up with a bunch of those wideouts here over the last week and a half or so. So maybe ask him who has impressed him the most just speaking to him. With Chark coming back for year two, Chris Conley, obviously a first-year Jaguar, at least, a free agent addition from Kansas City. And we heard from Marquise Lee this week as well. So a lot of wide receiver talk. And honestly, if you're out there for OTAs, that's about what you can see. You can see the quarterbacks and you can see the wide receivers and not a whole heck of a lot else going on out there for OTAs generally this time of year. But, you know, we do what we can. We'll talk to Hayes and get caught up with him as he's out at Jaguars OTA practice today. So we'll get whatever he's seeing thus far here on a Thursday. Again, I don't expect him to be out there tomorrow, although they're scheduled for a Friday practice. We got this state in football history, the Roll and Reese Roll around the NFL, and some historical nuggets that I wanted to share with you, some stories I found that at least caught my attention, and I'll share them with you as we continue along. It's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history. Happy 30th birthday to one-time Jacksonville Jaguars and New York Giants and current Chicago Bears cornerback Prince Amukamara. Amukamara was a first-round pick of the Giants in 2011. Spent 5 years there before joining the Jags for 1 year in 2016. Started 12 games here for Jacksonville. Had 5 passes defense. Last year, Prince intercepted 3 for the Chicago Bears. Happy 84th birthday to Hall of Fame flanker, halfback, and wide receiver Bobby Mitchell. Mitchell was drafted by the Cleveland Browns in 1958. He wasn't sure whether he wanted to pursue a track career. This gives you an idea of how much NFL football has changed. Bobby Mitchell was unsure if he wanted to pursue a track career. He once held the record in the 70-yard low hurdles or pursue a football career. Browns head coach Paul Brown offered him $7,000 to play football after his rookie season, and that decided it. Mitchell spent 4 seasons in Cleveland before joining Washington, where he would spend the next 40 years, the first 7 of those as a player, the next 30-plus as a scout, a position he was asked to take on by then-Washington head coach Vince Lombardi right after he retired, also as a coach and a front office man. Mitchell retired from the Washington organization in 2003 after he felt he was unfairly passed over for the GM job in 1998 by then-owner Jack Kent Cook. And when then-head coach Steve Spurrier reissued his number 49 jersey that had not been worn since he retired at the time of his retirement in 1968. Mitchell's 14,078 yards combined was the second highest total in league history. Happy 27th birthday to Houston Texans wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins has been selected as a first-team All-Pro in each of the last 2 years and has had at least 151 targets in each of the last 4 seasons. Hopkins was a first-round pick for Houston in 2013. They made him the 27th overall selection. In case you're wondering, the Jags took Luke Jokel, number 2, that year. So it worked out a little bit better for Houston there in the first round. Hopkins has managed 66 catches for 842 yards with 5 touchdowns in his career against the Jags. In case you were wondering how that stacks up against how he's fared against other teams around the league, he averages more yards per game against 17 other teams. He has 853 yards, 3 touchdowns in 11 games against Indy, 1,194 yards and 7 touchdowns in 12 games against Tennessee. So the Jags, the best against them, at least in the division. Happy 49th birthday to former Jacksonville Jaguars running back Randy Jordan. Jordan spent 3 seasons with the Jags from 95 to 97, Most notably, he is the man who scored the first regular season touchdown in franchise history when he caught a 71-yard touchdown pass from Steve Berline on September 10, 1995 against the Cincinnati Bengals. The touchdown also gave the Jags their first lead in franchise history. They would go on to lose that game 24-17. Jordan had only 27 touches for 153 total yards in his 3 years with the Jags, but he is now and will always be the first player to score a regular season touchdown in franchise history. And happy 30th birthday to Jacksonville Jaguars safety Cody Davis. 2019 will be the second year with the Jags for the mostly special teams player. He was signed in free agency with the Jags last year. And that is this state in football history.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
Hollywood, Florida police are investigating the theft of over $500,000 worth of jewelry taken from the home of New York Jets running back Le'Veon Bell. Two women who were referred to in a police report as Bell's girlfriends. Reportedly, they were staying at the home, to which Bell returned to find his closet in disarray with the girls and the jewelry gone. And the Jets are so broken up about it that they canceled minicamp today. Like, I doubt that's the reason. Apparently, they're doing some team building activity, but the Jets are not practicing for their final day of minicamp today. And instead, I think I saw the story as they're going to play Topgolf together as a team. I doubt that's a direct reaction to Le'Veon having $500,000 stolen out of the closet, but it could be. The man might be down. The big free agent signing up there with the New York Jets. The Cleveland Browns are releasing left tackle Desmond Harrison, with some reports indicating he has been absent and late for team meetings, missed a flight to get there for the mandatory minicamp as well, so he's going to be late. It's probably not the sole reason for a team to release a potential starting offensive lineman, but Greg Robinson, the one-time number two overall pick to the Rams, who started 8 games last season for the Browns, likely steps into that spot. He filled that spot for most of last season, too. But Desmond Harrison going to become available. Preseason schedule news. The Oakland Raiders will host the Green Bay Packers in Winnipeg, Manitoba, for a Week 3 preseason game on Thursday, August 22nd. And that is the Roland Reich roll around the NFL. Now, asking fans today to share their thanks on the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and I think this is probably the segment this most fits into when everything is said and done. We're doing this date in football history. So I wanted to take a look back. A couple years ago for Christmas, I got a book. It was When Football Went to War, and it has a bunch of stories about guys who, you know, put the pigskin down, went over, fought in whatever war it happened to be. It wasn't just World War II, but it was, you know, all the wars. It was Korea, it was Vietnam, it was, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, all the war. If football players have set aside the time to go fight, the book at least commented on it a little bit. Wanted to share a little bit of what I found. For instance, there were 1,002 NFL personnel who actively served during World War II. 1,002. 46 of those men were eventually elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame after having served their country in World War II, including Dante Gluefingers Lavelli. Gluefingers Lavelli earned his nickname from his head coach during his time with the Cleveland Browns. Paul Brown, who said that Lavelli never dropped a pass in practice or a game, gave him that nickname. After Lavelli enrolled at Ohio State, he was drafted into the U.S. Army, left school to fight in the European theater. Lavelli was sent overseas with the 28th Infantry Division, participated in the invasion at Normandy on Omaha Beach, was later involved in the Battle of the Bulge and the Siege of Bastogne. Lavelli said later of his experience at Bastogne that he once spent 3 days in a foxhole that he had dug for himself through a frozen ground, praying while the German artillery exploded around him. If you've read or seen anything about Bastogne, you talk about hell on earth, what they were dealing with during that particular battle. One in five members of the 28th Infantry Division lost their lives in battle in the European theater during the war. When he got back stateside, Dante Gluefingers Lavelli became a defensive end with the Cleveland Browns, eventually winning four AAFC championships and three NFL titles while playing for Paul Brown and the Cleveland Browns. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1975. 45 other men also inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame after having served during World War II. Here's another story. This one doesn't end quite as happily as the one you just heard. Nick Basca played one season for the Philadelphia Eagles, but on December 10th, 1941, 3 days after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, he enlisted in the United States Army and was sent to Fort Bragg for basic training, eventually becoming a member of General George Patton's 3rd Army. Here's a passage from that book I was mentioning a moment ago, When Football Went to War, about Basca. It said, in December 1943, Basca was shipped to England as Allied forces began to build up to D-Day. He was assigned to the 4th Armored Division in General Patton's 3rd Army. Knowing that German intelligence had its eyes on Patton, the 3rd Army played the part of decoys rather than participate in the actual invasion in Normandy. The 3rd Army arrived via Utah Beach on July 11th. By August 1st, Patton was on the attack and pushed his men relentlessly, with the tank corps leading the way in a fast-moving assault that kept the German defenders off guard and discombobulated. Allied command thought the 3rd was moving too quickly, slowed them down before finally giving them a second green light on November 8th. Patton attacked Metz. 3 days later, Corporal Basca was killed in action in Obrecht. And there are so many stories like that when you go back and look of men who were doing whatever they were doing. They were in college. They were their senior years of high school. They had found whatever job they were going to be doing professionally. What happened in Pearl Harbor happened in Pearl Harbor. And within weeks or days or months, thousands upon thousands of young men in this country lined up and said, I will serve in whatever way that I need to fight this threat. 75 years ago today, they landed on the beaches in Normandy. Wanted to share a couple of those stories here with you this morning. Again, asking you, instead of a question about Jaguars football today with the fan feedback spotlight, instead, just share your thanks for those men and the sacrifice that they made 75 years ago. Again, all kinds of stories out there to be told. 1,002, I thought that was kind of cool. 1,002 NFL personnel participated in World War II, the most of any of the sports here in the United States. 46 of those men eventually elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So again, a big thank you to them as we honor and remember them 75 years later at the invasion of Normandy 75 years ago today. Hayes Carline going to join us next. We'll get his reaction to what's going on with Jaguars OTAs as they are on the field today. We'll see if they're on the field tomorrow to wrap up OTAs. Mandatory minicamp coming up next week. As we roll along, it's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I had to learn what it was like to be a pro, and I never forget the conversation I had with Paul Puss Buzzley. And I asked him, I said, hey, well, you know, what do, you know, to take care of yourself? And he was like, hey, man, you got to take care of your body in order, you know, to last here. And I was like, well, what do? He mentioned about the massages and taking care of your body outside of practice and watching more film. And it kind of hit me my second and third year than it did the first year.
Those are the words of Josh Evans, who joined us this morning here on Jaguars Today, the former Jacksonville Jaguars safety. And again, just what you have to learn, you know, and there's a bunch of guys that can be in your ear telling you what exactly that entails when you get into the league, but until you're having to go through it, there's just nothing else quite like it. As we welcome in Hayes Carline, who is the Jaguars beat reporter for us here at 1010XL, and Hayes, another day out in the heat for the Jaguars. Maybe it's the last day this week. What's your gut tell you about practice tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what Doug Marrone decides. He's always wanted to use all the OTAs. I think that's been a Marrone-Coughlin staple, but that could be an adjustment that we see, tomorrow. So we probably won't get the official word until tomorrow. I think they want the players to come here expecting to work, but we'll see. They may look at it as this is a good opportunity to do some team bonding stuff in the mold that we used to see. Gus Bradley used to always take off the final voluntary OTA. So we'll see if that's a possibility tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if you saw the story yet this morning with the Jets, but the Jets canceled the last day of their mini camp to take the entire team to go play Topgolf, which caught me a little off guard. They got everybody in town. They're going to play Topgolf. They've had Le'Veon Bell on the field for 2 days, and now they're playing Topgolf.
I got to see how well he handles a 7-iron. But I think it's interesting, really, you know, for the Jets, as you mentioned, with Le'Veon Bell. But I think for this team, it would be the wise move, just because I think they've had the guys that have been here for the most part, I think have given everything they can give in this format. And so I think it is always good to sort of, show them some appreciation by treating the last one as something fun. And it kind of gives them the, you know, hey, let's have some fun today, even though we're supposed to be working on the field. And then let's, you know, if we're going to give you this, let's come in on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and have the best mandatory minicamp that we've had here. So, I think there's times where you sort of have to let off the gas very rarely, but I think they do exist. And I think for the Jaguars, it'd be a good time if that's what they decide to do.
Sure. And it's always hot here in Jacksonville in May, but it feels like it's been pretty extraordinary these last 3 weeks with what these guys have been out there. And again, they're just in helmets and shorts, but it's still really, really hot. Like, you can hear it. I can hear it in the interviews that you have with guys after practice. Like, they get to that point where I can almost hear that their brain is completely fried. Like, they just need to get out of the sunshine at some point. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they decide to give these guys the day off tomorrow. Doug Marrone speaking before practice today, and one of the things he was asked about is the guys that maybe haven't been here for all of the OTAs, and it was good to hear that he's been in contact with all of them, and they expect everybody to be in-house next week.
Yeah, that is good. And, I think the next week is going to be important. I think it sets the tone for, you know, what's the expectation. Gives the staff a good barometer to evaluate and see, okay, well, where are we right now? What the strengths that we feel are strengths, is that what we're seeing? The weaknesses that we're concerned about, do we feel better about those? Do we need to go make a move? So I think it will really be an intriguing 3 days of Jaguars football to kind of see where they stand before they head into the 5-6 week break before training camp starts.
Beyond your article talking about Leonard Fournette earlier this week and the idea of the Jags shouldn't be thinking long-term with Fournette. You got 2 more years of him, run him as much as you can, and then move on. Even with that being said, what do you feel like is a fair level of expectation for Fournette going into year 3, given what we've seen on and off the field from him through years 1 and 2?
I think it's all up to Leonard Fournette. I think he has the chance to have an outstanding season. I mean, I think for once he's not going to be seeing as many eight-man fronts, eight-man boxes as he has seen in the past. I don't think we're going to be seeing any defenses playing goal line at midfield with Nick Foles running the show. So I think it all lines up well in terms of the talent that he has, the fact that I think he's going to have a little bit more space to operate. And I do think the offensive line, if they can stay healthy, will be a more improved unit. So if you were to tell me right now Leonard Fournette's going to play 14 games, which I think is always a fair expectation for a running back. If you get 16, I think that's a bonus, but I think you should expect 14 because of the grueling nature of the position. I mean, if you were to tell me right now he's going to start 14 games and start and finish 14 games, I think a realistic expectation is 1,200 yards rushing, 400 receiving, double-digit touchdowns. I mean, I think he's going to have the opportunity to do that. I mean, John DeFilippo, to quote him, he didn't sugarcoat it. He basically was like, we want to make Leonard Fournette the centerpiece of this offense. So he's going to have every opportunity, and that's why it was so puzzling to me as to why he would choose to skip half of the voluntary OTAs. Not just because of everything that's happened with him in his first 2 years here, but why wouldn't you take advantage of this? I mean, this team wants to make you a star. Why would you say, I'm not going to go to 5 practices when, you've got a new offensive coordinator, you've got a new quarterback, I think he could really be a threat out of the backfield. So I think it is important to build the chemistry with Nick Foles. And I get it, they have training camp, but why not take advantage of every opportunity when you've got a chance to really see your star shine as bright as it ever has with a big year this year in year 3.
Hey, it's Carolina, the Frangie Show, joining us to talk a little Jags from out at OTA practice this morning. And I think you know, you get into what Flip had to say about wanting to build this offense around Leonard Fournette, and part of me says, well, who else would they build it around, right? Like, they got – the quarterback seems to be in a better spot with Nick Foles being here as compared to Blake Bortles, but they don't have an alpha at the wide receiver spot. So if they have an alpha anywhere on offense, it's going to be Leonard Fournette. It's a – how good do you feel about the Jaguars' offense with – when you try to put all these pieces in this puzzle together – I feel better about it than I did in 2018, but how good in the end do I really feel about what they have on that side of the ball?
Yeah, I think they have the chance. If they can stay healthy, I think they have a chance to surprise some people on offense. You know, but they're probably not going to stay healthy, you know, with everybody. So, you know, you have to wonder how good the depth will be and how those players step in when needed. But, I mean, I think it's there. And again, Flip didn't have to go as far with his Fournette comments as he did. You know, he could have said, well, you know, we're a balanced attack. We, you know, we have Nick here. He's, you know, I've got a really good relationship with him. You know, I like our receiving group. I like our tight end group. We could certainly, you know, spread it out more and throw it a little bit more. But he really, I was surprised at how much, you know, he really went into detail about, you know, his plans for Fournette, not in terms of how they're going to use him, you know, play in and play out, but just on the whole. How big of a part he is, he's planning on being. So, you know, I think offensively they have a chance. I don't think they have to be anything better than average. If you were to tell me right now they're going to be, you know, 16th in scoring, 16th in yards, 16th in third down, you know, 16th in turnovers, sacks allowed, I think this team has a chance to go to the playoffs because I do believe the defense has the chance to be top three, top five, and pretty much every significant defensive category. So if you're excellent on defense, average on offense, that should get you to 10 wins.
Rookie running back Ryquell Armstead going to be out for the rest of this week of OTAs, also going to be held out with a slight hamstring injury for next week at the mini camp. How do you feel about the depth at running back compared to where they were last year?
That's a great question. I think it's too early for me to tell. I think Armstead's done some nice things. You know, but this is a format that you should look pretty good in. And I do have questions about, you know, Leonard Fournette. I still, you know, am really surprised that he elected to miss, really only attend four OTAs. So you have to assume, you know, you have to make a guess as to how he's going to treat it. If Leonard Fournette is, you know, is what they drafted him to be, then I think that the depth behind them will be fine. I think, you know, between Rawls and Armstead and Blue, you know, I think that's a good enough group to get you through. And again, I mean, running back's probably the most loaded position remaining in free agency. It seems like it's one of those that if you had to resort to working the waiver wire a little bit in the season, that you could probably get away with it, particularly if you've got a really seasoned, experienced quarterback like Foles. So, I'm not as concerned with the running back depth. To me, the running back position all comes down to Fournette and how driven he is to have what really could be a monster year in terms of he's certainly going to have the opportunity to have a monster year. It's up to him to take advantage of it.
The rehab rotation after OTAs continues today. We had Marquise Lee earlier this week speaking after the OTA practice on Tuesday. We have Cam Robinson scheduled to speak after practice today. What are you looking to hear from Cam as he tries to recover from that ACL?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting just to hear his process and how far along he feels like he is. I will say this, Cam looks a lot bigger to me. He looks like he's really done some good work in terms of building up his upper body, which I think was probably one of his bigger weaknesses, you know, was the power game. So that's really encouraging to see that it looks like he's really been dedicated in the weight room to building up his upper body. So yeah, just hearing about how it's going, what's his timeline, you know, and things like that. And really, you know, why was he struggling so much? At least that was the perception in camp and in the start of the year. Was that something he picked up on? What's the correctable, you know, nature of it? So it'll be interesting to see how candid he's willing to be in terms of, you know, a very abbreviated second year in the league.
Yeah, what was your big takeaway from what you heard Marquise Lee had to say a couple days ago?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think the fact that he's running routes is what's so exciting. I think, you know, it's the first day we were out here, you know, he was running, you know, just in a straight line, 40, 50 yards, and he looked good doing it. And then, you know, to see him the other day, you know, really, you know, I mean, not sharp cut, but he is running routes. He's running routes that I'd say like a walkthrough level. And that's exciting because that's obviously, you know, the cutting ability is probably going to be the last thing that returns. So just to see that we're still this far out and to see that he's at least incorporating some of that into his workout off to the side, I thought was really encouraging. So, you know, I think he's saying the right things, and Marquise Lee's got such a great work ethic that, you know, if anybody can beat this timetable and this severe of an injury and get back to the player that he was very quickly, it would be Marquise.
Jalen Ramsey will be back in the building by the time we speak again, Hayes, next week for mandatory minicamp. What are you most looking forward to asking Jalen about?
You know, to be honest, I don't really have that much for Jalen. I mean, we'll ask him about his summer and you know, I mean, his plan for, you know, the 5-week break and how things have gone. But, you know, I think Jalen is we pretty much know what he's been doing. I think we know his confidence level. You know, I think it'll be interesting maybe to get his take on Foles' signing. So I'll probably, you know, probably throw something like that at him in terms of, you know, hey, what have you heard from the guys that have been here? You know, what are their early impressions of Foles, or what was your thoughts when he signed here? So probably a little bit more of that, asking him about new teammates and things like that, because I think for the most part we're pretty. I mean, I guess it could be different, but it seems like he kind of is taking the same model that he's taken before in terms of working out with his dad.
Yeah, and I like Jalen is one of the few guys where in that locker room, I think next week when he steps to a podium, which I would expect to happen maybe Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, but I expect the team will put him up there at some point next week. If you ask him about Blake Bortles, he would be the only one of the few guys in that room that I think might give you an answer besides we wish him the best in L.A. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know what Jalen's answer to that question would be.
That's a great point, yeah. And he will probably be asked that to some extent. So, you know, it will be interesting to see. Even if he's asked about Foles and brings up Blake almost unsolicited, like, that would not surprise me. So it will be interesting to see. You know, does Jalen try to walk that fine line of, hey, I want to compliment the guy that's my new teammate, and I want to do that in a way that I'm not disparaging my old teammate. But, you know, Jalen doesn't really worry about, as you well know, that line very often. So he may come out and say something that, you know, certainly grabs a headline or two.
Sure. What do you have coming up this afternoon on the Frangie Show?
I'm looking forward to interviewing Jeff Swaim, the tight end. I haven't gotten a chance to talk to him since he joined the Jaguars. So, you know, he's been here for all the OTAs, and that's a position that certainly is one in which I'm sure he looked at it and said, yeah, that'd be a great spot to go to because I can pretty much guarantee I'm going to get 500, 600 snaps based on who they have now. So looking forward to catching up with Jeff Swaim, just the strides he's made, how he's fitting in with Flip's offense, what he thinks of Josh Oliver, things like that. So we'll look forward to playing that interview on the Frangie Show later today.
Looking forward to hearing it, Hayes. And I know you've had the opportunity to talk to a bunch of the wide receivers on the team here over the last week. Has there been one that has stood out, maybe is more impressive just in speaking to him?
It's interesting, and I appreciate you playing those. I think there's not one that really stands out. I think Conley's maybe his just maturity and seasoning in the league sort of comes through. When I asked him, you know, hey, do you and Nick have, you know, like pre-snap body language or is that still forming? And he looked at me like I had lobsters coming out of my ears and was like, oh yeah, we've got a million things that we already are up to speed on in terms of that. So I think that probably stood out to me more than anything that, you know, Foles and Conley have played together before, but it's not like they were, you know, together for 4 years and both came over here. I mean, it was a fairly limited run. So to see, I think, how far they are in terms of their connection and everything that goes, all the things that we heard with, you know, Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison and the things you've got to have for that quarterback receiver connection to really be special. There's got to be things that you're both seeing that you're able to communicate to each other without barking it out. And so I think that stood out more than anything else.
Sounds good. All right, Hayes, we'll look forward to it this afternoon. Appreciate you giving us a few minutes, bud, and go enjoy the rest of the sun and the heat there at practice.
Thanks so much, Tony. I appreciate you having me. Take care.
Thank you. Hey, it's Carline, who is the Jaguars beat reporter here for us at 1010XL. Appreciate him giving us a few minutes out there from OTA practice. As maybe today wraps up OTAs. Maybe it doesn't, as they're scheduled at least for an OTA practice tomorrow. When we return, there is Sports Illustrated is doing a week-long deal where they're asking the guys that they have covering the NFL to basically take their crackpot theories of things that they would like to see implemented in the league and expand upon it, like expand on the idea. Like when they're sitting in a meeting and they're having to pitch ideas for what they want to do an article about, and everyone in the room just starts rolling their eyes like, he's going to bring up this again, right? It's such an insane idea. Well, they've started publishing these articles with guys explaining their idea. I don't know how much I love what Andy Benoit said he would like to see happen with overtime to change it, but I will share with you what his idea was and get into that a little bit. Also get into the fan feedback spotlight where we're asking you today, 75 years ago today, it's the anniversary of D-Day, so just asking you to share your thank you for the men who sacrificed so much 75 years ago today to ensure that we can sit here and do something as stupid as talk Jaguars football in the NFL for a couple hours Monday through Friday. So thankful to them. We'll get into that. We'll get into a bit of a wild overtime idea from one guy to try to improve it as we continue along. It's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Hey, what's up? This is Tiki Barber, former New York Giant, and now Don in Kinky Boots on Broadway. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Tony Smith, Emmanuel Thaler in here with you as we get set to wrap it up here for a Thursday on Jaguars Today. I want to get into Andy Benoit, who's got his article up. They call it Bad Takes Week over at Sports Illustrated at SI.com. Bad Takes Week, and as they describe it here at the top of the article, where Monday morning QB staffers have been asked to expand upon some of their worst football takes. These are columns on the ideas they believe in strongly, even if it makes the rest of the room groan during our pitch meetings. So we'll get into his idea for how he would fix the NFL overtime as it is currently construed here in a moment. First, though, let's get out to the phone lines. Welcome in Fan Cam, who's dialed us up at 641-1010. What's going on, Fan Cam?
Hey, good morning, Tony. I just want to take this opportunity to say thanks to the millions of military that have defended our country and their families that have sacrificed so much for our freedom and the freedom of hundreds of millions of human beings around the planet that today live in a level of freedom that they would not have. And we really appreciate it, all of us out here, and thanks a bunch.
We appreciate that, Fan Cam, and I think we all feel the same way, buddy. And appreciate you giving us the call this morning at 641-1010. As look, guys, it's 75 years. 75 years ago today, those boys stormed that beach in Normandy, and thousands of them laid down their life, and thousands more in the years to follow to ensure victory over the Nazi regime and the Third Reich. And yeah, today's a day where you should do more than take a moment to remember the bravery and the sacrifice of those men who set aside whatever lives they had. Like, I'm sitting here doing a radio show, right? I'm doing a radio show about something as frivolous as NFL football. And I shared with you earlier this morning that over 1,000 NFL personnel people joined the war effort. They set aside football and went and joined the war effort during World War II, which is an incredible number. And, you know, it wasn't just football. Obviously, it was all of American society basically stopped to make sure that we had a winning effort against the Nazi regime and the Japanese as well in the Pacific Theater. I know my grandfather fought in the Pacific Theater, and while he was never willing to share with me any of the stories that he personally endured, and again, I don't blame him. I got an uncle who fought in Vietnam. He doesn't want to talk to me about what he dealt with and saw during his time there in Vietnam. I don't blame him. And for all the men and women that have served that have their stories that they want to share, you're darn right. I'm going to take a minute and listen. I'll listen as long as they want to talk about whatever is going on. You talk about the people who invaded those beaches in Normandy, you're darn right. They can have all the time they want from me regarding whatever they have to say about whatever it happens to be, having done what they did, so that I can sit here and talk about something as stupid as Andy Benoit's article on how to fix NFL overtime. I just spent 3 minutes talking about D-Day, And now I'm going to talk about how to fix NFL overtime. And I get to do it because of the sacrifices they made 75 years ago. And my goodness, I could not be more thankful for it. But Andy Benoit put out this article yesterday. And again, they even know. They know it's a bad take. Like, that's the whole idea, is it's this ridiculous take for anyone to have, and they go through and try to defend it. I don't know what the solution is for NFL overtimes. I don't think there's any of them that are fair, right? The only fair way to determine the outcome of a football game is to play a football game, you know? And if it winds up tied, I am one of these weirdos where if after 60 minutes the two teams have both scored the same, I'm fine with calling it a tie. I don't even need any kind of overtime, honestly, until we get into the playoffs. But even if I was fine with a tie until we got into the playoffs, what's a fair way to do it? You can't just play another game, you know, which is the only truly fair way to do it. Was I disappointed last year when we got to the AFC Championship game and it got to overtime and we knew both defenses were done? They were done. It didn't matter who was going to get the ball first in that overtime. It didn't matter that you had to score a touchdown to win the game on the first possession with the new rules that they put in a handful of years ago. It didn't matter. Both defenses, done. Dead on their feet. There was no way anybody was stopping anybody in that game. So essentially, when the New England Patriots won the toss, ball game over. New England Patriots are going to the Super Bowl again. And granted, Kansas City messed up opportunity after opportunity to put that thing away in regulation. They didn't get it done. The question becomes, is there some way to make it more fair? I don't know that there's any fair way to determine the outcome once we get into overtime. I can tell you, and I had this argument with a bunch of listeners after the AFC Championship game, I think there's a more entertaining way. I think there's a way that entertains more people than whoever wins the coin toss on a day where we know both defenses are done, they're in the tank, that whoever wins the coin toss is going to win the game. I think there is something more entertaining than that. Andy Benoit's idea is, instead of having a coin toss at all, he's ready to throw the coin toss out. He doesn't want a coin toss to determine who the heck's going to get that ball first in overtime. Instead, he wants it to be determined on who has more total net offensive yards over the course of a game, which brings in some interesting possibilities, right? Like, when you get the ball and you're tied and you got the ball at the 40-yard line, do you attempt a 57-yard field goal to win that game? Or if you need 5 yards to ensure possession in overtime, do you call a different play in that kind of moment? I think from that perspective, it's a little bit intriguing. Perhaps the idea, I think in the end, again, there's no fair way to do it. There's no fair way to do it. They played a 60-minute game. They couldn't determine a winner. There's not going to be any fair way to determine who's going to win it from then. Like, I know we're going to talk to Matt Hayes here in a moment, but I don't know how he feels about college overtime versus NFL overtime. I hate the college overtime. I really do. Like, I just, that there is no special teams as far as return units involved in the game at all. Defenses are putting their heels from the moment they step on the field. Like, I just, that doesn't feel like football to me at all. At least the NFL, it still kind of feels like football, where they're having the kickoff and, you know, both teams can at least potentially get a possession at that point. There's no fair way to do it. I don't know what the right answer is for overtime, and maybe we'll ask fans how they feel about it at some point here in the near future. But Andy Benoit's idea, net offensive yards determines who gets the ball first in overtime. So maybe that's more interesting than a coin toss. It certainly would add some strategy to a late-game situation that we haven't seen before. So at least an idea is out there. We're efforting to try to get Andy on next week, talk to him about that, as well as, you know, what's going on with the Jags and his expectations for him with Nick Foles coming into the fold going into 2019. With that, let's welcome in the Bullies of XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe!
At Moe's, our caterings come with a heaping side of peace of mind, not to mention the free chips and salsa, delivery, and setup. Visit Moe'sCateringFL.com.
As we welcome in Matt Hayes, and Matt, NFL or college overtime, which do you prefer?
If the NFL allowed both teams to get the ball, I prefer the NFL.
Okay.
And I can see why you don't like the college game, and I think a lot of people, the concern there is it's too close. You're 25 yards, and it's too easy, and it's too much stress on a defense. I think if they moved it back to, like, the 40, I think that'd be a little different. And they're trying to change it clearly now by saying, you know, you can only go so many overtimes before you start going into two-point conversion. They're trying to figure out a way to make it better. There's too many plays in overtime. The way they do it now, it's not only too much stress on defense, but it's too much stress on the players. They're basically playing – almost another quarter sometimes, and it's just not right.
Yeah, I think, and football has to deal with that issue, right? Like the idea you know, it's car crashes. You're asking guys to go through 80 car crashes, and then you're saying doing it 25 more times, right? Like the only fair way to determine the outcome of a football game is to play a football game. And once you get into a sudden death situation, it's not really football anymore at that point. It kind of is, but it's not ever going to be what it is for a game.
Right. We talk about this with Leon all the time on XL Primetime. And the reality is these guys go through stuff that the typical fan cannot even fathom. And again, I get it. As a fan, I want more football too. You know, overtime totally comes, we're all like, free football, yeah. But it's not. I mean, this is like real stuff for these guys. This is real heavy-duty, pounding, car accident-type impact every single play. Not every fifth play or sixth play or seventh play, but every single play. And I think that's, at some point, we have to start taking that into consideration when we start talking about extending games and overtime.
What do you guys got coming up on primetime today?
So we're going to talk a little Jags. We're also going to get into the interesting way that Steph Curry, how he has changed the NBA, not just because of winning championships, but the three ball is now the NBA. That's what the NBA is all about now. It's no more. Didn't you know back when Jordan and Magic and Bird, it was all, you know, you drive and create and mid-range jumpers, and it was dunks and post guys play with their back to the basket. Forget that, man. Now it's all spread it out like the international rules will give you, and you just basically chuck threes. Everybody's a chucker now.
Yeah, and if you're a 7-foot guy who can't hit a three, what's the point of playing anymore?
Right, right.
You know, like that's what it feels like the NBA has become. So we'll look forward to that. Before I let you go, Matt, we asked fans today, instead of a question about Jaguars football, with it being the 75th anniversary of D-Day, just to share their own things. And I'm sure you guys will be talking about it today on the show as well. But it is incredible. I mean, it is humbling every year when you go back and you start reading about the things that these guys did, the sacrifices they made, and what they gave up to go do it. I mean, you can read through story after story of guys who were playing baseball, playing football, playing basketball, and said, nope, I'm done. I'm done until this is done. We'll go take care of that, and then if it's waiting for me when I get back home, good. It's
Tony,
incredible.
You're talking 17 and 18-year-old kids, a lot of them, too.
Yeah.
And I think I went to Normandy 8 years ago, and the thing that stuck with me more than anything was when the World War II vet who was giving us a tour, he said to us, it was a turkey shoot for the Germans. Our boys coming on the beach.
Yep.
The only reason we pushed them back and got them to retreat is because we had more bodies than they had bullets. Think about that for a second. That's like stunning.
Yeah, and they had to trick them. I mean, the Allied forces had to trick them with where they were going to land to even be in that position.
Right, with the fake tags and the fake. Yeah, absolutely.
It's the entire invasion, it's pretty incredible. So, yeah, XL Primetime coming up next. Appreciate it, Matt. As Matt Hayes, Leon Searcy, Joe Cowart, Ryan the Hacker Green, who I saw in the picture of Doug Marone speaking before practice this morning, so I know Hacker was out there enjoying a little bit. He's sweating it off this morning as they get ready. XL Primetime coming up next. That'll do it for us. Again, take more than a moment today to remember. 75 years ago today, those boys stormed that beach in Normandy. Take more than a moment. As we say, that'll do it for us, for Tony Smith, for Emmanuel Thaler, and for Hayes Carline, for Josh Evans, kind enough to join us this morning as well. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Mike DiRocco in with me for a Friday show here on Jaguars Today.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go. Duval!